Blog Talk Radio.
You are now logged in to GrudgeInc.us, the number one source for grudge racers coast to coast.
Grudge Inc. is taking it to another level. Coming in 2013, all of your auto performance needs can be found in one location. Grudge Inc. will be launching an online auto parts store catering specifically to your auto performance needs. Being available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Grudge Inc.'s Grudge Store wants to be your number one online shop site. 2013, get ready for Grudge Inc.'s Grudge Store. More details to follow soon. Are you new to social networking? Well, Grudge Inc. has got a new site coming soon. Grudgebook will allow you to catch up and lock in with other grudge racers. Find out about all the latest events, view the latest photos, create your own blogs, and so much more. In 2013, Grudge Inc. takes on the social networks. So get ready to register and lock in. Grudge Inc. Grudgebook.
Grudge Inc. is taking over social networking. To get live, in-depth coverage on current races, follow us on Twitter at Grudge Inc. To view the most up-to-date and exclusive footage, subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/GrudgeIncTV. To get an overview of it all, friend us on Facebook at facebook.com/GrudgeInc. And last but not least, we have a weekly newsletter that we will send directly to your email every Monday. Sign up for this newsletter at www.grudgeinc.us. Once again, watch videos at youtube.com/grudgeinctv. Follow us on Twitter at Grudge Inc. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/grudgeinc. Grudge Inc. wants to be your number one stop for all grudge racing news and entertainment.
Examples and spend the next few minutes expressing gratitude
to God in prayer. Bow your heads. Lord, our Lord, you are compassionate and merciful, long-suffering and full of love. For that we praise and thank you. Amen. Thank you guys for, you know, another great Monday. And I just want to say, you know, we got a lot going on. We're going to get right into it. Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chris Nelson. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. Good morning. Sorry I missed you last week. Just stepped out for a minute.
Oh,
how are we doing?
Oh, we're doing great, Chris. We're doing great. We also got on here. Let me welcome to the Mr. Jimmy Marino.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning.
Inside joke. Inside joke. Well, this morning, our topic, we've been getting a lot of texts in. We're going to go right to it. Some more folks. I want to say that I want to give a shout out to Tim in Georgia. He drives a junk car. He apparently had someone to steal his equipment. And I know later today he probably will call in and talk about it. I tried to get Ernie on here and tell you about that device he has to put on cars, but I wasn't able to get Ernie so at this late moment. But I do want to give a shout-out for Tim, and if y'all know anything that can help him find his car, I believe you can go on Facebook for the people here in Georgia. We all know who each other is. And get that info to try to help Tim out and retrieve his car. But with that being said, we're going to move right along. Tim, I got you in my thoughts, buddy, and if I can do anything, I definitely help you, and you're welcome to come on and try to give us any insight how we can assist you here on the Bread Man One Time Show. Going right into the topic. The main topic that we had basically from last week, a lot of questions. This was asking about how do you determine tire size, you know, the tire and wheel size to put up under your particular vehicle. Let me give you a prime example. I used to run on 29.9s, and say I had a little 468 motor. If I were to put what I have on there now, size tire I got on there now, I got some 1533s on there with that 468 motor. This question is targeted at you, Chris. Do you think I would slow down, or do you think I would improve my 60-foot, or do you think I would speed up?
Well, it's a complex question. I'll try to keep it as simple as possible. More tire than what you need will slow you down. And what I mean by that is rotational weight will definitely slow the car down. Sometimes that bigger footprint or longer rollout will slow the car down. However, it is a very easy for the average guy change to make to go out there to a larger tire and give him a bigger window of traction. What I mean by that is he could be on a dirt road with too much tire and go down. The problem is when you're in those races which are neck and neck, they could be lost or won by the slimmest of margins. And it may be a case of if the track prep is real good and you have too much tire on there, it will slow you down just because of the weight of the tire and, you know, the rollout of the tire. So we really look at it, and a guy like Jimmy, I'm more of an engine guy, but just being around the race cars and whatnot, we will take a calculated approach on choosing what tire we're going to run. Now, when we're grudge racing, this comes into play, as well as some of the stuff that I do, which is class racing, also comes into play, where we can run various tire combinations. What I mean by that, sometimes a slick, sometimes a radial tire in one class, and we'll look at the conditions and the track prep and determine which is going to be the faster combination for those conditions and prep. And from there, we'll make some changes. So I'm going to hand it over to Jimmy. He's a little bit more well-versed with the car aspect of it, but from what I've seen, we have reduced the tire size on some of these cars, and you really reflect it in a car that's real consistent and looking at the numbers from the 330 on that are helped or hindered by the right or wrong tire selection, and that's really where you see it. You know, when we started to get away from the real big Pro Mod style 34.5-inch tire and things like that, and went to Mickey Thompson's, as they call it, Bubba tire, we saw the cars run better back half numbers with the smaller, lighter tire on them. So, Jimmy, you have anything you can share with us in that regard?
Yeah, I think another piece of that is friction against the racetrack. You know, the wider footprint he talked about and all that. You know, he talked about weight. It's also friction against the racetrack. You know, so that has a lot to do with it. But
you mean like when we walk on the Carolina starting line and want to rip your shoes off? You're talking about it slows the roll down on the car?
Exactly. You put a wider tire on a really sticky racetrack, and it's going to be harder to roll it. You put a less of a footprint on a sticky racetrack, and it's going to be easier to roll the car. Well, that does directly relate. You think, okay, I got 2,000 horsepower. How much difference can that make? It does. It makes quite a bit of difference. And like you said, when you start to run a smaller tire, you see better back half numbers. So ultimately, what I always look for is, you know, what is the, if I'm on a decent racetrack, and obviously we don't want to lose the race at the start line, but when I'm on a decent racetrack, I want to run the least amount of tire width that I can run, the least amount of tire total that I can run, and still leave the starting line and get our, you know, keep our 60 foot and our 330 where we need it to be, because I know that my back half is going to make up for it. And it's really a talk width, because rollout will determine your engine RPM going through the trap, so you got to consider that in. So like you said, it's very complex in deciding, and every car is going to be different. You know, personally, we saw pickups getting off the 34.5-inch 17 or 16 tire and going to a 10.5 on quite a few cars. We go to a 33 10.5W and go faster. People say, you know, that doesn't make sense, but, you know, less tire, you can't hit it as hard. Well, we would actually be able to hit it with a lot less, but go the same or better 60 foot, the same or better 330, and definitely run out the back door better. By running less tire. So even though you're not hitting it with as much nitrous, you still can get the car to move quicker because you got less weight to move.
I've got a classic example of this in the most exaggerated form there is. I was working this weekend on a friend/customer of mine's car. He's going to run Indy in an NHRA Pro Stock. He's hired Ken Lee, which is a veteran of pro stock tuning and things like that, to oversee everything with the car and play the crew chief role. We bought a set of tires with 35 runs from Krischer to take with us to only run the final qualifying session in Indy as a last-ditch effort to get in the show. Those tires weighed almost 5 pounds per tire lighter than a brand-new set, just because the amount of rubber that has been worn off them from 35 runs down the racetrack. So they deem it that critical to reduce the weight on the car, and they figure the track prep will be good enough to where they can still gain traction but run the back half. And they say that tire will be worth 3 numbers from the 8th mile on in a pro stock trim car. So that was a $1,000 set of tires with 35 runs on them, just to tell you how important they believe that is.
That is a prime example of it. And I never really approach it that much because in the nitrous applications, what we see is we beat the sidewall out of these tires is what it seems to happen.
Especially the heavier the car is, that is more of an issue.
Yeah. And on a car like we race, you know, a top sportsman car, a pro mod car, anything like that, we would end up beating the sidewall out of it and tire shake and driving through tire shake and just in how hard we hit it, that a 35 run set of tires are pretty well gone in the sidewall, but there's plenty of rubber in it. In a pro stock car, you know, as long as they're pretty close on their tune-ups and everything else, I don't think they see that problem. Is that true, Chris?
No, but every pro stock car that's 60 foot's well, and well enough to qualify, if you watch them, they'll shake at the top of low gear on a good run, and that's by design. They don't have enough torque. They don't have enough torque for it to lose the run, so to speak. The only time they'll lose a run is if they underpower it and lock the clutch up too soon. Usually they, you know, these are cars that have, a 270 first gear and somewhere between a 520 and a 550 ring and pinion. So they've got no torque. They've got a lot of ratio, and they won't really shake. You know, when they lose a run, it's because they just missed on the clutch setup. It's not really a tire issue per se. And there's guys that I know that have bought, just kind of a run-of-the-mill super gas car, and they have that car just for doing burnouts on their tires to get them ready. Well, put it this way, we had six pairs of beadlocks set up with tires on them, and they were going to change them every shot at the racetrack. Because in that 6 to 15 run window, that's when they're at their best. And, you know, we're talking about splitting hairs. So this is, at various levels of racing, this becomes more and more critical. And, you know, you got it as simple as a grudge car on 28. You know, I've seen guys or been told that guys have just changed the tube manufacturer. A Hoosier tube is thicker than a Mickey Thompson tube. So I know guys that have taken their Mickey Thompson tubes out, put in a Hoosier tube in the tire, which is thicker, which in essence stiffens the sidewall, and see results from just as simple of a change as that. So no matter what type of racing you do, there are gains to be made. And I don't know how many times I've seen money change hands on the starting line from the slimmest and narrowest of margins of a win or a loss. So everything does matter, depending upon how much effort you want to make with it. But it does make a difference.
On a 28, 10.5, or 29, how many passes would one of those tires make? I mean, get out of it on a pretty decent power motor and setup.
How heavy of a car?
Roughly most of those cars are 29 to 3,000 pounds.
I'll put it to you this. If I was to be racing one myself and we were going, say, 470s on 28s in a 2,700-pound Mustang, let's call it, with a good, you know, gangster small block in it, I'd put 10 runs on a max and take them off. And it's the same answer is like what Jimmy was saying about breaking down the sidewall. They'll just start to give you this shake. You look at them, you put them on the side of the trailer with $75 on them, everybody looks at them and goes, man, these things are hardly even worn. That is true on the tread patch, but on the sidewall it's starting to break down.
Right.
You can actually
right.
look at the sidewall. You deflate them, take them off the rims, you can actually see the deflection in the sidewall of a tire that's wore out. Not when it starts to, but when it's pretty wore out. You see that there's plenty of rubber on it, you can see the deflections of the sidewall.
So let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question, Jimmy. Say, for instance, you went out there and you made 8 hits on a set of 28s at 2,700 pound in a Mustang, and you took them off. And I came up to you and paid you $150 for them, but my car, say, runs 540, 550. How many passes would I get out of that tire then, or is it even worth it to buy those tires and put them on my car?
I think absolutely it is. It's, I think the difference is you get another 15, 20 runs out of them at that rate. You're not trying to hit the tire as hard. And I think where you really see the difference is what you're going to see in that tire is really from about 60 feet to 200 feet is right. where you're going to see that sidewall issue. Not in the first 60 feet necessarily, but beyond the 60 feet to, say, 200 feet, where a car that goes 540, 550 isn't, you can put down, you can, with gear ratio and nitrous jet and everything else, you can put down as much as you need to at the let go of the button because you can just turn more on. But
right.
it's not making the power typically. And as Chris was saying, there's weight and all that other stuff. Why are you going 550? If you're a light car with not a lot of horsepower, you can take advantage of it. If you're a heavy car with quite a bit of horsepower, but you're not going but 550s because of weight, then no, that's not a good idea. But you really have to look at how your car reacts in that 60 to 200 foot area, and that'll really answer that question. If you're not real aggressive in that area and you just don't have the motor to get real aggressive in that area, then you probably could get 15, 20 runs out of them beyond that after they've got 10 on them.
Well, I just want to let it thank
you. We use hand-me-down tires on different cars. We hand them down all the time.
Absolutely.
Well, I just want to let the callers know if y'all have any questions for the Tech Talk gurus, you can press the 1 button, and we'll answer any of your questions. You know, I'm sure someone does have a question out there. Let me scroll down and see, make sure that, you know, I'm not missing out on anyone.
One thing I'd like to add, in our technical topics that we have, don't be afraid to ask a question, because a guy like myself who's raced, you know, his whole life, second generation in this, I've been fortunate enough to work on some really good quality stuff, but at the same time, I cut my teeth with some, you know, street cars and some mild performance stuff and just moved along the ranks. So no matter at what stage of racing that you're into, Jimmy and myself, you know, and the guys that are sharing some technical aspects with you, we've been there and done that. So no question is beneath me. I can speak for myself. I'll be glad to talk to you about your 383 or, you know, your 904. So anything, nothing will be a dumb question or beneath us to answer, because we've been there, been in your shoes, and have been fortunate enough to progress into some faster stuff. But, you know, we've all been right where, you know, any of your callers may be right now. So be glad to answer any questions.
We do have a hand up right now. Let me go to that caller. 770-2657. Your mic is hot.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good morning.
It's hell, boy. I was just wondering, roughly a car that makes roughly about 1,000 horsepower to the wheels at 2,700 pounds, what kind of ETs do you think that would make on them? On a 10-inch tire, 28-10 tire.
What kind of ETs do you think? How do you make 1,000 horsepower? Is this a turbo car?
Nitrous car.
A grudge car. You make 1,000, so you probably make 1,200 at the flywheel.
Right.
If the torque converter is right, which is now, here's one thing that's major, and it's going to be next week's topic for me. If the torque converter is right, because that's the link between the engine and the chassis. If that's wrong, then it doesn't matter how much you make. If the torque converter is right, you can, you know, run, you know, well into the fours with a combination like that in the eighth of a mile. That's a very
right.
common power combination when we've got, say, an 800 horsepower small block with one big, you know, big system on them. They'll make 1,200 at the flywheel, which is about 1,000 at the wheel on your average
right.
drivetrain loss. And, you know, that's a potentially a 480 combination.
If the car works well and
the converter is right.
So if I were to make around 800, you're saying I should be able to 5-0 easily, as long as my converter and, you know.
If the rest of the combination is there, you have adequate power to 5-0 really easy.
Okay. That'll work.
Chassis, gear ratio, everything working together, you know, to get that kind of speed.
And what do you like better? Do you like banking with multiple systems, or do you like a progressive with one?
I'm a fan of multiple systems myself. And okay. I like that because you can keep the engine tune-up more uniform throughout the run rather than leaving the starting line with a bunch of timing pulled out and pulsing the solenoids and things like that. And the engine kind of takes a while to kind of clear up the plenum and you know, get clean and then really start to accelerate. I prefer, and there's many ways to skin a cat. I'm not telling you my way is right, another one's wrong. But what I prefer is smaller systems and turn them on as the, you know, traction's available. And that way I feel like you can keep the engine happier and you know, throughout the run.
Okay. And there was another question that came up the other day we were talking about as far as small block Fords and engine timing. And roughly on a 32 jet, what kind of spread would be a safe startup but not excessively rich for the 32 jet? What do you recommend, you know, on the fuel and also max timing on small block Ford? And not a Yates-headed motor, closed chamber head or anything like that, you know, typical, you know.
An inline head like a Victor?
Right, exactly.
Which, that's good that you followed up with that cylinder head type, because that was my next question. This engine that you're speaking of, what does it like to run at normally aspirated for timing?
Well, actually, never know, because we don't really run normally aspirated. And this is a general question for a lot of me and friends, a lot of friends with a small block Ford. And, you know, we debate on it a good bit. And just trying to get an idea what, you know, just a good safe startup. And what type of fuel pressure, what type of point spread, and, you know, because mine, and it's just from experience, you know, I was telling some friends the other day, you know, on a 32 jet, I don't like to see no more than 12 degrees of timing. And
total?
Yeah.
Or retard?
That's when it's retarded. That's when when I'm on one system. Then when we cut the other system, I'll drop it down to about 6 or 7 in total.
If I was to answer you with a general answer on that, I would run a – what type of fogger system do you run?
Speedtech.
Okay,
yeah, just
cut off nozzle then. No problem. If it was me, I'd start off much like what their recommendation would be, which would be about a 4-jet spread, a 32 nitrous and a 28 fuel.
Okay.
Be about 5.5 to 5.75 on the fuel pressure flowing through a 73,000 orifice.
Right.
And something like this would require at least C16 if you're a VP man, as far as specific gravity and lead content in the fuel. And as far as timing goes, I feel like those engines on average when we dyno them will like to be about 36 degrees normally aspirated if they have compression in them. And they're just a general average of all those engines. They like to be about 36 degrees.
Okay.
I call that 32 jet about 325 horsepower myself. That's what I believe it would make on average for power gain. You know, if you went from 36, and I really feel like if you went all the way down to 12, if I'm understanding your statement correctly, that seems like it's very low on timing to me.
Right. Okay.
I would be more inclined to be pulling, you know, 12 to 13 degrees out from my base, which would put me in the low 20s. Now, that's a very general statement. It may not work for you, but on average across the board, that's being, you know, all things considered, unless it has an extreme amount of compression or things of that nature, that would be a good place to be. Now, that number you're talking about going down to 12 total on a 32 jet, that's more like where we would be with like a Yates or Blue Thunder, a shallower valve angle head.
Okay. Well,
most of these Victor heads are, you know, trick flow heads, like we're talking about, the inline style of head.
Right.
They've got combustion chamber volumes in the, 58 to 64 range. Right. And they're pretty forgiving with the timing by comparison to the cannon mouth stuff.
And when you say the 4-point spread, now you're saying that's just roughly starting out, correct?
Correct.
And then
correct. If I started to move up higher than that 32 jet, I'd probably go to a 6 spread. Just because we're starting to use up the area on the nitrous cylinder quite a bit. So we'll have to start spreading the jets to keep from getting ridged. But that, like I said, this is a very general response and on the conservative side.
Right, right. But, I mean, would you be scared to take off with a 6-point spread off the rip?
Myself, if it was my own car, no, absolutely not.
And
but leaving some room for error in there for your particular combination, I would start off and give the advice to start off with a 4-jet spread to be safe, and then I would read the plug and react from there.
Right. And one more question. And
hold on one second. Hold on one second. Hell boy.
I'm gonna get you that. I'm gonna get him. I gotta ask. I got to know.
No. I'm saying phone. We can't really hear because there's a lot of background noise in your phone. I was trying It's not
okay,
clear.
Okay. Let me ask this question, and I'm going to mute. Would you rather pick up power by going more jet or more timing?
More jet is going to be a safer approach by putting more total area or volume of nitrous through the engine. The timing will get you in trouble way quicker than running too much nitrous.
Okay.
As you start adding more and more nitrous, you'll see the car actually slow down when it's had enough before it hurts itself. But, especially on a Ford, as you start putting timing to that, I mean, you can go 1 degree and pick up a mile an hour. You can go another degree, pick up another one. You can go 1 degree and put 8 pistons in it. That's how sensitive you can walk over the line on timing. Or you may get into a scenario, you leave the starting line, it starts the wheel stand on you, and you short shift it to set it down. And when you do that, it loads the motor real hard. If you have a lot of timing in it, that's when it'll hurt the motor.
Right. Okay. I'm going to go to the
mute first. Whenever you get an engine into timing trouble, it's going to be where it's closest to peak torque. So, like, that's where the engine's going to see the most load, and it needs the least amount of timing in it. Like when we dyno, we'll see a lower timing number make more torque and a higher timing number make more horsepower. So that's why we put a curve in the ignition box to advance from whatever made the peak torque to whatever makes peak horsepower. So an engine like yours may make peak torque at 33 and make peak horsepower at 36. So at 5,500, we'll have to have 33 in it, and at 8,000 will have, 36 in it, and just create a timing ramp. That's when you're trying to maximize the best out of everything. So when you're going to hurt one with timing is when the motor sees a lot of load, like on the starting line or at the gear change, if you load it and pull it down below peak torque.
Well, okay. There you have it. You're going to got other callers calling. Caller, I hope we answered your question. We definitely appreciate you for hitting one, but...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Good question.
I'm going to
mute, by the way.
I'm going to go to the next caller. Caller 317-4185. Your mic. Hello. Welcome to the Brand Man Show. Hello?
I think we lost that person.
Yeah, I just put him back on mute. I guess he put his hand up. I don't know what area he's out of. 317 area code there.
Indianapolis.
Whoa. Well, that's pretty good. If y'all have any more questions, you're happy to press the one button. We're going to go to a commercial break right quick. I have to pay the bills, So y'all hold one moment for a short commercial break. We'll be back with you and go back to the phone lines and answer some more questions.
Are you new to social networking? Well, Grudge Inc. has got a new site coming soon. Grudge Book will allow you to catch up and lock in with other grudge racers, find out about all the latest events, view the latest photos, create your own blogs, and so much more. In 2013, Grudge Inc. takes on the social networks. So get ready to register and lock in Grudge Inc. Grudge Book.
We are We're back. Back to our topics. Let me try this caller
Red
again.
Redman, let me add something real quick. Our last caller that had the jet spread questions and general tune-up questions, I'll tell you, those questions that he asked are probably some of the most commonly asked questions there are in you know, for guys that are into nitrous racing or just getting going or getting their feet wet with learning to tune their own stuff. And those are very good questions he asked. I tried not to get too complex with the answer, but it is critical in all these aspects that he was looking at, cylinder head types and things like this, do come into play. That's why I try to answer that question with a little bit of a general response that would work for the masses. But if anybody has any questions that they want to talk more in depth of, a little bit more specific, they could always reach myself at the shop, where we'd be able to be reached on Eastern Standard Time, 727-321-5756. I'd be glad to talk to guys, whether they're our customers or not, just to try to keep them out of trouble. This is an expensive game that we're in, and there's some simple things that you guys can do that I'd be glad to share with some guys out there just to keep them out of trouble with, you know, initial baseline tune-ups and things like that. Now, I'm not saying I'm any kind of expert, but I can give you some pointers from being there and done that to keep you out of trouble.
Yeah, and what I'd add to that is, you know, that's helped me a lot learning. The key above and beyond that is getting to the racetrack with a tuner. You know, and anybody who knows me knows my mentality is, I want to teach you to race your own stuff. There's some tuners that you hear, they want to just keep going with you and keep going with you, and I do that with some customers, but if you can get with a tuner that will teach you how to race your own stuff and get you comfortable with it to get you that baseline with your setup and read plugs at the racetrack, because that's the hardest thing to do over the phone, is to explain what a spark plug looks like. And that's really the information Chris would need, you know, to get you fine-tuning information. So, you know, whether it be me or anyone else, there's a lot of good tuners out there that can get you where you need to be and get you that baseline, but it really takes getting them to the racetrack with you.
Most definitely. I believe that caller had it. Somebody else had their hand up. Hold on 1 second. There's another caller. Let me try him. 4185.
Sounds like he's making a pass right now.
770-2657, I believe. Hold on a minute. Go live with this one.
Just me again.
Oh, okay.
No problem.
Hold on one second. 404-2864. Your mic is hot. 404-2864. Hello. Oh, hold on, Chris. I go back to
what area code's he from, Redman?
Hellboy's from Hellboy. Hellboy. You back in. That's the guy. Go ahead, Hellboy.
Tell me that, will you hurt your motor quicker over leaner or more fuel? I've seen guys, and this is another debate we had. I've seen a guy go down the track without cutting his fuel pump on for his nitrous, and all he did was slow up.
Not hurt anything. Yeah, you got to have the fuel there to make a fire. Nitrous
right.
isn't flammable. It just will help you burn the fuel. So no fuel, no problem. Too little fuel and lean, you're going to have problems. You'll start to
right.
you know, burn stuff up. But I, in my opinion, see guys more often than not get into these rich conditions to where they'll get, you know, over center on being conservative and
right.
start lifting ring lands and things like this, because they get fuel between the top and second ring,
and then they'll ignite it, and it'll stand the top ring up and pinch the second in a lot of instances. And I personally believe I see more, when we're disassembling and inspecting an engine, more troubles from being rich than I do from being lean. And like I said earlier, if you have a consistent combination and you're tuning on it, generally when you get it lean, it'll slow down and not respond to the change. And a wise tuner will recognize that and be, oh, shoot, you know, I'm too lean. Put some fuel back in it and, you know, have to go somewhere else to make a change, whether it be more jet by area or, you know, a timing or application change. But more often than not, they'll slow down before, you know, you'll hurt one from being lean. Unless you just plug up a jet or something like that and you have some unforeseen mechanical difficulty, that'll hurt one in a heartbeat. But as you're spreading the jets and, you know, leaning things up with fuel pressure and things like that, you'll start them to see where they don't respond to change before you'll actually burn something up from being lean.
Right.
I agree. And in an order of, in my experience, in an order of sensitivity, the most sensitive and the easiest way to hurt a cylinder is timing.
Mm-hmm.
The second easiest way is being too rich, and the third easiest way, the least, is being too lean, the least often that you see it.
Correct. I would agree.
And that's from personal experience I've seen at the racetrack, from my own experience working on my own stuff and everything else we see, I've personally burned up, if I had to say, and Chris knows this, I've hurt more pistons from being too rich than anything. When you see holes in pistons, in melted pistons, it's usually a timing thing. And I don't, like I said on the show a couple weeks ago, I think I've burnt one or two pistons on all the cars in my life from being too lean. Lean is just, you know, I don't see it that often where you're actually hurting them from being lean. Now, maybe in the big, big inch, highly competitive pro mod stuff, you know, class racing competition stuff, they get those lean conditions. They get to that point where they may burn them up more. I've heard more of that, but Chris, you know more about that stuff than I do.
I have to say it's more timing related than it is air fuel.
So if you're going to be conservative, you know, if you're trying to run a conservative setup, my suggestion to anybody and everybody is always don't think running it rich is being conservative. Running the correct air fuel mixture is conservative. If you're trying to be conservative with yourself, be conservative with the timing, and don't try to be conservative by saying, oh, look, my stuff's not lean, so I'm good. My stuff's not lean, I'm good. Lean it out a little bit. Get the plug looking pretty. You know, get the air fuel mixture right, and be conservative on the timing side. That's my suggestion.
I agree wholeheartedly. And here's one thing that happens a lot and gets people in trouble. If you run your engine on the rich side, let's say, and then you tow down to Bradenton in December, and everybody's got sweatshirts on, and you've got this extra fuel in the motor. Now you've got that cool, dense air to burn it. Now you're going to get yourself in timing trouble because you just made more power. And that's very common to happen, because if you run them excessively rich, then you get into good weather conditions, you're going to make more power, which would require less timing. Then that's when you get yourself into trouble. Then everybody goes, oh, the air is good, it leaned out. And then I pull the head off the motor and it's got the eyebrow over the valve pocket missing and everything else looks perfect. And I'm like, no, this isn't a, leaned you out kind of scenario. This is you got yourself in timing trouble because you've made more horsepower. And that's generally what will happen.
Well, caller, we answered your question. We have other hands up. Did we answer your question, caller? Hellboy.
I remember I said I had to kick off for a sec, but I'm rolling now. I'm trying to think of good two questions I just had that we all debate about on the other show we talked about. Who is this? You said his name, Fred. What's your last name?
Nelson. Oh, the Nelson competition in Pinellas Park, Florida.
And we also have Jim Marino is a chassis guru.
Bumper to bumper specialist.
Okay. Exactly. Exactly.
And actually, I'm getting wanting to ask, let me see. Okay. How, and this is a generalized question, they want to know, how do you know if you got the right converter?
Well, first and foremost, if you had a race pack, it'll turn it from being opinion-based to being fact-based in a heartbeat.
Right.
If you looked at the engine and drive shaft ratio, which would translate into converter slip.
Okay.
If you don't, that's what I'm used to looking at. I'll probably have to let Jimmy take over from there on some, you know, on some other topics or trends to look for. That's generally what I'll look at myself, and use that to judge, you know, whether we have the right. Because slip's not everything. You also have to have the car accelerate, how much drop in the gear change. There's lots of things, and, you know, generally I'll read that off of a computer data acquisition system. Jimmy can help you out.
Can you get that off 7531? Enough information?
No.
You
can
you
get
can
the
get.
Engine. You can get the engine side, but you can't get any drive shaft. You can get the gear drop, and you can get, you know, some RPM factors, but you can't get drive shaft RPM.
Right. Slippage.
You can get it off the Sportsman Race Pack, which is a $700 unit that we do sell, and that would give you all the information you would need to really accurately, factually judge the torque converter.
Okay.
And let me go a little further with that. You know, race pack data is the best way to get that. You know, any kind of, it doesn't have to be race pack brand, but any kind of drive shaft data truly gives you that information. That's really what you need. Now, we can watch a car, and I can go to the racetrack and watch a car and get an idea, and like Chris said, an opinion-based idea of what I think the car's doing. What I do with a lot of my customers is I'll sell them a race pack wiring harness for a race pack system, and let them buy the harness kit and a drive shaft sensor that comes with it, and I'll put my race pack in their car to tune their race car, and I have one, a spare one at the shop that I use, and I'll bolt it in their car, and we'll go test with it, and we'll get all the information we need, and we'll get them in line, and when we're done testing, I take it out, and they still own the harness stays in their car. If we're ever going to go do some, you know, next time we want to go try some different things, we'll stick the race pack back in it. Now they're in the system for, I want to say, last time we did it was about $550 for a V300 harness, sensors, all the stuff they need, the baseline stuff. That's always the best way. The difference in torque converters nowadays, back years ago, torque converters were either tight or loose. And if they were tight, they were tight, and if they were loose, they were loose. So if it was tight at the bottom, it was tight upstairs. If it was loose on the bottom, it was loose upstairs. Now we've got converter guys that have changed the game completely, and they can make it loose at the bottom, tight at the top, and lock up completely upstairs. We can go that far. They can do so many things with them that you can – I don't think any tuner will tell you that they can't make your car better by getting drive shaft data and G meter data and taking that information and working with a torque converter guy. I don't think there's a car out there that, unless they've already done that and they've perfected their combination, I don't think there's a car out there that can't gain from that. It's something we're all, like my own stuff, it's with the nonstop, that's our biggest tuning area. We'll get the motor where we need it to be. We keep the motor happy. We put as much through it as we think we want to put to it, and we really start messing with gear ratio and torque converters. And we'll, over a time period, make great gains just by doing that stuff. Chris, you've seen it with my car. So,
yeah, absolutely. It's probably the cheapest aspect of the race car that has the most effect.
Hold on 1 second, Chris. We got another caller just popped in that might want a question to go with that. Hold on. 941-7259. Your mic is hot.
Good morning. Good morning, Brad, man.
Good morning. How are you?
How you doing? I was just calling in, man, to see how everything's going. Jimmy.
How you doing, Smoke?
All right. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
How are we doing today, Mr. Smoke?
All right. How are we sounding
out there?
Well, you sounding all right. Hellboy's just going to drag that question out, though, because we ought to talk. We kind of talked about that a little bit.
One of your favorite topics.
That's one of the late ride-on topics, huh? Yeah. I knew that topic was going. That sounded like one of ours, a 45-minute ride topic.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing is there's so many different aspects of a torque converter, too. I mean, that you know, you can change the weight of the fluid and change the characteristics of the converter.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of guys, you know, there's transmission fluid, there's hydraulic fluid, there's 50 weight, 30 weight. And that's when we really start splitting hairs on some of these converters.
Yeah.
And then, like, this stuff that's out there that you can unbolt, take apart, change the stator, reshim it. And you've got this variable reacting torque converter.
You left the one out, Chris. Air compressor oil. You left out the air compressor oil.
Don't give away all the things, Jimmy.
Don't give it all, Jimmy. You got to pay for that
in your pocket. Yeah. But, yeah, it's a very complex question. And you think of a $2,000 torque converter as being expensive. It's probably the single cheapest thing you can change on your car and have the greatest effect.
Yep. That's how that come back to torque converters. You know, that's all we change in the 632 car, you know. That's it, really.
That's it. I mean, that was huge. I mean, I couldn't have done anything for you to have that much gain left in the car from the car that's already fast. I mean, to find that much gain in the engine, we would have spent tens of thousands of dollars because it would have required a whole new top half of the engine. But a converter change, which gained them 10% of efficiency, which if you're making, let's say, 1,500 horsepower, 10% of that's 150. That's like turn another system on without being any harder on the motor. I mean, and that thing responded instantly to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very, very critical.
Don't tell Jimmy that because I got to bust him upside the head.
That's all right.
Oh, God. Y'all go ahead on with the show. Y'all sounding good.
All right, Smoke. We'll see you later on.
All right.
Thanks, Smoke. We don't have any questions up at this time, but I do have a visitor that's on to tell us about what happened over there in Texas. Let me look him up here. Atomic Dog, if you're out there, shoot at me. Stroll down here. We can get a Texas report.
I got one for you guys real quick. I don't know how many people have been following the Oklahoma street racing scene that they're showing on TV, mainstream TV now. Well, what do you guys think about that show?
Hold on one second. Hello, Tom McDowell. Go ahead, Chris. What were you saying?
I was just commenting on that some street/grudge racing finally made it mainstream on Discovery Channel. There's a show called Street Outlaws on there now that I'm sure a lot of people have seen that are covering the Oklahoma street race, grudge race scene on the street. And it's actually just wrapped up their first season. They got signed for a second season. And it's actually been a pretty good show. It's not been too cheesy like they usually will dumb it down for, you know, regular TV. It's been a pretty good show. I just wonder if anybody else has seen it, you know, who's ready to make the ride to Oklahoma and show them what they've got?
Well, we heard this way that the show was just—it was what is called a show. That you know, it's like, you know, wrestling. You know what I'm saying? That's what, that's the word is in Georgia. I don't know. I watch it. I do watch the show because I enjoy seeing two cars go down together. You know what I mean? So, me personally, I'm not knocking the show. I watch it. But, you know, at first I thought it was, you know, real grudging, not like, you know, what we want to do. Like, you know, the heavy hitters of grudge racing, the Dogs and Tony Vines and all of the guys at Grudge Inc., the real killers, Grudge Inc. killers.
Now, these are more the kings of the street.
Yeah. And I think that it really is a lot of show. I think it stems from guys no different. It stems from probably guys no different than us. But as soon as a network gets involved, they're going to dumb it up some so that they can gain. Because let's face it, if they kept it real and only us out there that are truly into grudge racing watch it, that's not going to bring ratings. There's just not enough people. So if they have to, you know, in the widespread theme of things, they have to gain new interest to get the ratings and to keep it going. And I think that's a lot to do with it. I don't think those guys are any different than the guys you just mentioned. It's just, you know, the network's going to film a whole lot, and they're going to show what they feel like showing. And I bet you a lot of the people on the show look at that, watch an episode and think the same thing. Man, sometimes they're making us look like fools a little bit and stuff like that, but that's part of signing a deal like that. I'm sure they're not thinking about the check to cash.
Yeah, and awareness for, you know, drag racing. I mean, if you look at it, you see NASCAR every week. You don't hardly ever see drag racing unless it's 2 o'clock in the morning on some ESPN 8 or something. But anytime we can get what we do out in front of more people, I think it's good for everybody.
That's true.
I agree.
I agree. Too. I think we have another caller here, fellas. Let's see. I'm going to open their mic. 404-2864. You got your hand up. Welcome to the Brand Man Show.
I'm not on y'all's top, but I was just calling. I want everybody from the Atlanta area to be looking out for 85, 86 Monte Carlo SS. It's one of Coupe Performance cars that got sold Saturday night from Tim Campbell's house. So I just want everybody to be on the lookout for that car. This is Swine calling. If you see the car,
what's the combination? Big Block Chevrolet. If you can, get us some more information about what it is in case we see this car in pieces and somebody calls me with something for sale that I can, you know, turn you guys on to or something to that effect. Because more often than not, you know, these cars get found piece by piece than they do whole. So, you know, if you can share some information on what, you know, what the combination is more like, so where we can be aware, be glad to help out.
Okay. Well, like I said, you know, the Big Block Chevrolet Power Glide in it. I believe it's 9-inch rig in it. It's a great Monte Carlo. It has junk on the back window.
Okay. We'll keep our eyes peeled.
Definitely. I'll keep watching down in South Florida.
Sounds like his phone went out.
Redman,
I don't know if y'all want to touch back on. We kind of got off that tire issue, but I had a little point that I wanted to bring up on the tire issue, if you guys want to jump back to that, Redman.
Go ahead, Jim.
We're going, you know, that's where we started today, and we talked a lot about different tire combinations. And one of the things Chris briefly mentioned was this radial, you know, some races will have a set of tires on, and I know one in particular that I race with has a set of tires on rims with radials and a set with slicks. And based on the conditions that we show up to and the track conditions we look at when we get there, and we'll make a decision on whether to run the radial or the slick. That is coming more and more to the forefront as you go to different places with this class racer entering the grudge racing. And even more importantly, I think you'll see it, you know, there's a race coming up in Georgia that's going to have a class race that's going to have a grudge class within it, and some people are talking about going to. And, you know, I think you're going to see where guys that are used to running slicks are going to need at that particular event on that particular surface are going to greatly benefit from running a radial. And you know, I think there's a lot to be said there. The surfaces that grudge racers versus class racers typically race on are very different. What a class racer would consider typical, small tire class racer, radial tire racer, 275 racer, what they consider typical is completely different with what a grudge racer would consider a typical racetrack, middle of the road racetrack. You know, and I think there's a lot to be said there. Anyone who's going to step over to a class racetrack, you know, you hear about, you're always hearing about a radial's faster. Well, it is faster in the right condition.
On a good track.
Yep. I've gone to grudge races and seen guys like, you know, Kevin Fiske show up and stuff like that. I remember House of Hook not too long ago, and you know, he's running his radial that he can run some incredible numbers on. But he's at a grudge race on a grudge racetrack, and he's not able to do what he always does, what he's expected to do, because the conditions just of the racetrack are, you know, he didn't say this, but I would expect if I asked him, were to walk up to and ask him, he'd say, man, that track's garbage. Well, it's not. It's what we're used to. It's what grudge racers are used to. It's not what class racers are used to. So there's definitely something there between the slick and the radial conversation to be had based on racetrack and conditions. And I think they're very different racetracks, which one's going to be better. And I think it's if you run the right tire on the correct racetrack and they are able to switch back and forth, it's night and day.
Absolutely.
So,
what you're saying is if they do happen to show up to a meet like that, you know, I mean, the only thing I see that a grudge racer, and this is just my take on it, a grudge racer probably never been on a track that had that many cars on it at one time. I mean, you know, I race at drags all the time where it's, you know, 300 cars. You know, the track is tight. Why they're but a grudge acknowledge that your racers they'll be able to go out do real well out there. I do. That's my opinion.
Yeah, it's not just how many cars. That is a big factor. There's a big factor in how many cars, but the prep, the amount of glue they spray, the mixture that they use when they're prepping the track, you know, a VP glue or resin or whatever they call all that product they use.
Right.
The mixture that they, how they mix it, what they prep it with, how much rubber they drag into the racetrack and leave on the racetrack versus when they scrape the racetrack. Those types of things make a huge difference. And that's what I wanted to point out. You know, I see some grudge racers going over to these, you know, these class, I hear about this class race that's coming up, and I'm not necessarily trying to promote this class race. I'm just saying, you know, reading on Grudge Racer and stuff about some people intending to go to this class race, and I'd like to see them go prepared and have a good showing for the Grudge Race community. And I think to do that, they need to be aware that a track like that is going to be very radial friendly. And if they're going to go there and they need to be prepared to do that and know what to do with their cars to make them work on that type of racetrack and what kind of tire they're probably going to need to run to be as competitive as they possibly can in those conditions. So just something I wish
Brad,
to be aware of.
Hey, Breadman, Jimmy, you guys,
yeah.
You guys there? Hey, I'm going to have to jump off for a second. Handle some business here at the shop, but if you guys anybody out there needs anything, you can reach us here at the shop, Nelson Competition, or check out our website, Nelson Competition. We'd be glad to, you know, help you out, You know, you don't have to be a long-time customer or anything like that to, you know, be able to do business with us or anything like that. So we're open, we're friendly, you know, give us a shot and we'll try to help you out as best we can.
Hey, I appreciate your influence and appreciate everything you do for the show.
Hey, I've got a vested interest in seeing it do good just like everybody else does, you know, whether it's a racer, manufacturer, or like myself in the engine business, you know, the bigger this thing grows, the better it is for everybody.
Right. Well, you have a good one, Chris, and we'll see you.
All right. Take care, fellas.
All right. It's Nelson, take folks. I know what you're saying over there, Jimmy. I know what you're saying. But we're going to – do you have any – no. Did you have anything else?
There's a lot of topics we can cover, and we've talked off the air about a few different topics we can cover. But really, what do the callers want to cover? What are people interested in knowing about?
This is a great time for you guys to hit in. Otherwise, we're going to go closing comments. Before the time runs out, if y'all want to just give a shout out to someone or tell us where you promote your next race or whatever you'd like to do, this is a great time to I can go down the list and do what we need to do. And if you just want to say hello, it doesn't matter. Hit the one button and we can go from there. Here we go. We're going live, Jimmy. If you have any questions, we'll still answer your questions as well. 678-1445, your mic is live. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning, good morning.
Good morning.
What's going on, Brett?
Oh, nothing much. Man, how are you? It sounds like the one and only. Big Dave, how are you, buddy?
I'm pretty good. I had a quick question about a nitrous system, a Farga, the one nozzle. With the two systems in it?
What, that question? You're addressing Jimmy. Jimmy, go ahead, Jimmy. That's one for you.
All right, go ahead. Now, what's the question?
About the NX system, the one nozzle with the two systems in it and one?
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
What you think about that system?
I have seen it at the PRI show. I have never tuned one. I've never messed with one. That really is a question more for Chris, and we can get him with it next week or you can give him a call on it. Here's what I would say. The way I think it would, technically speaking, I think it would work on two smaller systems. I think that you would, I'm not sure how it would work. If there's only an orifice size, there's only a size of that nozzle, and it's only going to flow so much. And when your nitrous pressure is at, let's call my baseline, 950 pounds, and your fuel pressure is at, say, 5 pounds, well, when you're forcing nitrous through, it's actually going to pull fuel with it. And you start mixing them up together. I don't know. I personally don't know what the reaction would be because you got one kit and then you turn another one on. I think that when the second one comes on, it's probably going to pull fuel pretty quick. I'm not so sure about the reaction there and how that works. I'm sure Nitrous Express has done testing with it, but I've never seen any of it. So that really didn't answer your question. I guess the only thing I can say is I'm unsure of it.
Okay.
But that would be definitely – I know Chris has done in-house a lot of nozzle – you know, he's done some nozzle testing. He's done some on-track stuff. He's tried some different things. I know he has a lot of experience with Brandon and the Speed Tech stuff and Brandon's new stuff, the Switzer Dynamics. I know that he's messed with Steve Johnson stuff quite a bit. In the old Edelbrock stuff. I know he's tested some of the Nitrous Express stuff in the past. I don't know how recent he's done any of that. So you just don't see a lot of it in the in the big inch. And when I say big inch, V8 nitrous stuff. You just don't see a lot of Nitrous Express stuff. They really focus their business more on the import stuff and all that. And not saying that's a bad thing, just we don't see enough of it to really get to test and see how it works, because we just don't see it on that many vehicles.
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry we couldn't answer your question, but
that's a good one. But I don't really have an answer for that. I'm interested. I'm actually a Nitrous Express dealer, and I use a lot of their stuff for different, bottles, valves, a lot of different stuff. But their nozzles and stuff like that, I haven't used any of it, just because it's not necessarily the jets are not interchangeable. They're a different style jet, so it's just a whole different, you have to own different jets and everything when you start running the Nitrous Express stuff.
But what I can do, Dave, is shoot you the number, and you can call Chris, and y'all can elaborate it on a little more. I will do that for you. But in the meantime, did you have any questions, Dave? Did you have any other questions?
That's about it.
Okie doke. With that being said, Jim, you got any other questions? We're going to go ahead and close this thing on out. I was waiting on Atomic Dog to get in here and give us a race report, but he never came through and said anything. What went on? If anyone would like to promote their race, this is a great time to do it.
I've got one. I've got a race coming up. I actually talked to Miss B and Ronnie Brown last week when I was on vacation. And on September 21st, they're going to be holding a race at South Georgia Motorsports Park. They're talking about doing, and then the expectation is to do a top sportsman class. Also a 28 and a 29 class. I don't know the details on that yet. The flyers aren't done, and I know they were still working out the details. Ronnie Brown's races at South Georgia are always seem to be really good races. I enjoy going to them. And I'm looking forward to that. We plan on bringing the Camaro to run that top sportsman shootout and trying to get a shot at the belt for that race as well. At the top sportsman belt. So we're going to see who has it at that time and go from there. I think that's going to be a great race. I'd love to see everyone out there.
Okie doke. We got two hands up. Let's go to the lines and see what we're talking about. 678-0758.
Yep.
0758. Your mic is live. Go ahead.
I got a question. How much gear would you run in a 2,900-pound stock transmission car?
Well, what transmission? What first gear in the transmission?
169.
169. And a big block, small block?
Small block.
Small block, okay. 169, hold on, let me do the math real quick.
Caller, you sound like a bracket racer, caller. Do you like top-up racing?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
1.69. I'm doing some math here real quick. I would actually probably, what size tire do you run?
28. Yes.
I would probably run a 389 to a 410. What seems to be working out pretty close is 4.0 gear. ATI makes a 4.0. Is it a 9-inch rear?
No, 8.8.
8.8, okay. I'd do a 389 or a 410. I actually have a car. How aggressive is the small block? Is it pretty stout, or is it, you know, is it an inline valve, or is it a cannon valve, Yates-headed inline valve? You know, yeah. That's hard to say. Yeah, I would probably start with a 410. Not seeing how the cars run or anything like that, not asking too many questions on the air about it, you know. I'd probably start with a 410 on that. We have one that's got a Chevrolet, a little Chevrolet motor in it. We run a 430 in. It's just a little stock block 383. We run a 430 rear gear in it with a 180 power glide. And it's pretty stout, but it's only on one kit. So I can get pretty aggressive with the gear. I can't put too much on it being a stock block. So I get pretty aggressive with the gear. But I'd probably start at a 410 and you'd be right in the range.
And what's the difference between a 169 and 180 trans gear wise? If I had 180, I have both.
I would prefer the 169 any day of the week, especially in your combination. Because what you're going to find out is when you run less first gear in the transmission, meaning a 169 versus a 180, you'll have less engine RPM at the gear shift because you're dropping ratio by less. Therefore, and you're also less aggressive in your first gear off the starting line, total ratio, when you combine your first gear and your rear gear. So it allows you to run more rear gear without getting too far out of whack with your total ratio. I don't know if you're following what I'm saying here. I'm trying to keep it simple. By doing that, it allows you to, with eighth mile racing, allows you to have a better, when you go into second gear, you've got more gear ratio advantage, more leverage advantage going down the back door because you're able to run more rear gear. Now, in the past, you would need to run, if you put a lot of rear gear on a 180 first, you get so aggressive off the starting line, it would be very difficult to get off the starting line because you're floating a real fine window there. That's why you see a lot of people going to these 400s with 148 first gears and 140 first gears and all that kind of stuff, because they can actually, even though you'd say, okay, they're only running a 140 first gear, how does it leave the starting line? Well, they'll go put a 456 rear gear in the thing and make up for it. So the first gear actually works out to the same, but when they pop that thing into high gear, it's got a lot of rear gear ratio advantage, a lot of leverage advantage, and it runs out the back door real hard. If they put that 456 in there with a 180 first, it'd just be so aggressive on the starting line that it just want to blow the tires. It'd be very tuning sensitive at that point. Well, just opens your window up.
I hear a lot of guys talking about like going from the 180 to the 169, like they have a lot of problem with the 169 braking, that the 180 is supposed to be stronger.
It is. The 180 is supposedly stronger. Put it this way. We had a car that could run with a 632 in it. It was a top sportsman car with a 632 in it. It would run in the 430s. With a 169 first gear power glide, and never once broke it. And it had quite a few runs on it. I mean, and we, you know, it'd go better than one flat 60 foot just about every time. And we weren't breaking it.
Right.
So I would expect, now the car's probably lighter than yours, but we were leaving against, you know, with a wheelie bar and everything else, and we weren't breaking it. Car like yours, in theory, yes, is the 169. If you look at the physical parts and how they have to get to that ratio and how they have to shrink some parts, technically it is not as strong in the 169, and transmission guy can explain it better. But I don't think it in the realm of what you're doing that it makes a difference. I don't think you're going to put it that much on the edge to where you should break either one, unless you have something else going on.
Right. And I got to know, because it's not guaranteed you're going to run fast with this car. You go from a 180 to a 169.
No, a lot of it has to do with torque. We're back to the whole torque converter conversation. If your torque converter's not right, you know, you could gain from running a 210 three-speed.
Right.
You know, because it's working better with your combination. But
right.
To me, what I've seen in a perfect world, if you really work your torque converter, that two-speed, 169, even 157, they make a first gear now.
Right.
You know, if you're going to work your torque converter rate and end of it, you can mold your torque converter around that stuff and gain quite a bit.
Right. See, because the reason I ask, you know, some people, I hear some guy ask this, just because they're going to go from a 180 to a 169, they feel like they're going to go faster. I'd be like, I don't really agree with that, you know what I mean? So that's why I ask.
They should be more consistent off the starting line. They should open their tuning window at the starting line quite a bit more is what it should do for them. Should make it easier to race the car.
If they were to do nothing
but take their combination, take a 180 out, put a 169 in it, change nothing else, what it should do is open their tuning window up at the starting line.
Right, but it's not guaranteed going faster, though. I don't know. Not guaranteeing
it's going faster.
Right.
You'd have to modify some other stuff to make it go faster. You'd really have to mess with your tune-up, but you could, you know. It's all combination. You know, it's all just, everything's got to work together in a perfect sequence.
Right.
So.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot. That's all I had, Rick.
All right, thank you, sir. And that was Jimmy. That was Jimmy Marino answering your question. Chassis tuner. Going to the next caller. Caller number 478-1750. Your mic is
good afternoon. Good afternoon, Brad.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I was calling to let you know good show going on, and I got a race coming up August the 31st in Putnam County, a 580 shootout, $50 entry, and 12 car minimum. $1,000 will be the minimum that will be paid out. Got a G-body shootout going on for the same thing, and an 890 class and a hardtail race, August 31st in Putnam County. And hit on a dragway.
All righty, sir. Well, there you have it, folks. What is the name of the race going to be called?
Hell on Earth.
Hell on Earth.
I will be going into battle with Lester Neely out of Atlanta. And I got two G-bodies, two of the nicest G-bodies around going up against each other. Blue Magic against Brown Sugar.
Okay. Well, sir, thank you for calling. And there you go. Hell on Earth. One of the promoters here locally over in Madison, Georgia. Thanks for calling in, Chief. Did you have any questions for
where did you say that race was, Breadman?
August 31st.
Where at?
But funny is Ed Hunter Dragway.
Okay.
Edenton, Georgia.
Okay.
Edenton, Georgia. You ever heard of that, Jimmy?
No, I haven't. I haven't been there.
Yes, Edenton, Georgia's been around a long time. Well, caller, thank you for calling. And with that being said, we're going to go unless you got anything else, Jimmy, we're going to go ahead and get us some lunch, man. Hopefully you buying today. All them lobsters you
That's
called
it.
The other day. God of mine.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have a nice cookout at some race coming up. I'm just not sure where and when yet.
Well, we're going to go down this list in closing, hopefully we answered everyone's question. And, you know, I apologize to all the listeners. I didn't get a chance to get Atomic Dog on. And, boy, I tell you, here he is coming back. The one and only. Welcome to the Breadman Show.
Hey, what's up, Brad, yep. Man? I apologize for that, man. Working, man, I had a lot of things going on. I had people going on mute and couldn't say nothing. So how's everybody?
Okay, hold on a minute.
Hold on a minute.
This is Atomic Dog, folks. Atomic Dog is in the house. Yeah. Jimmy, stop that over there, Jimmy. Atomic
yeah.
Dog, what's going on with you this morning?
Hey, what's up, Brad, man? Man, I've been just so busy this morning, man. I've been here, but I was on mute and couldn't talk, so I had some things going on here at work, so I just had my phone sitting down.
No problem. I clicked on you a couple of times, and I never heard you say anything, and, you know, I didn't want to call you no names because, you know, from what I was told, they already was calling you that over there during your race. I want to know what happened. Talk to me. Atomic Dog, what went on over there, those roads into Texas? All roads lead to Texas, but they said that you never took your car to trailer to put on the two-lane highway. Talk to us, Atomic Dog.
I wish it was so true. It's just so far from the truth. Hey, man, we had a good show over there, man. You know, a lot of action, a lot of racing. But myself, you know, unfortunately, man, you know, I took that thing up there, and first time I tried to shake it down, man, I believe it broke the band on the transmission. And, you know, I don't have a transmission. I can just go get one from somebody with the combination I run. You know, everybody got Alglots. You know, they don't always have the same shaft. So my converter wouldn't work. So, I got that Lenco flying type shaft in that transmission. So, you know, it wouldn't work for me. So, hey, with that said, that kind of killed me for the day. I was disappointed more so than everybody else. So I definitely wanted to run Tree Man. And it just didn't happen. I got to try another day. But all in all, man, there's a lot of racing out there, man. As you know, people out your way, Tony Bynes came out. And, hey, they left with a Kool-Aid face. So y'all see. Anybody, Boss Byron and crew, they left Texas with a Kool-Aid face. They didn't get nothing. A couple of guys might have paid in the punk out, but then I believe they lost two or three races. They got punk out on two. And so, you know, Cowboy, he did a foot race. Every time you come to Texas, somebody going to do a foot race of $500 to $1,000. And Cowboy Got his tail kicked over that foot race. Pulling all the cars here in Texas, man. Tony Thorne, he won a race. I think it's two. And Blind Eye Killer was supposed to run Nate from Carolina. Nate had to pay the park out on that. Then Blind Eye Killer came back and got another car. Yeah. I emailed.
Breaking up bad, Atomic Dog. You break real bad.
What is another call?
Anybody?
I can't think of all the names. I tell you, it was just so many, Birdman. It was just so many races going on. Once the heat went down, anybody know, man, it's hot here in Texas, and it's hard to get anything jumped out before 6 o'clock when you're in the middle of the summer like that down this way. But I tell you what, once it cooled down, racing all night, man. We raced clean to after 2 o'clock in the morning, so. Hey, they had to stop. They had to stop because they run with a curfew around 2 o'clock. So he let us go to about 2:50, and he had.
Hello, Atomic Dog. Yeah, we can't hear. We got another caller that I'm gonna click in. Let me get to him. Yeah, we lost him. Caller 228-1932. Your mic is
hey.
Hot. Welcome to the Bread Man. Hello.
What's going on, Mr. Bread Man?
What's Tell going
dog.
On?
this little Scooby here. I came out down there and engaged, made my first initial appearance at the Grudging Show with my last 10, and I took on the Arkansas board. And we got it on, man. It was a great show. Hey, them boy racing down there in Texas.
Didn't y'all beat the Arkansas boys?
Man, as one of my buddies say, I didn't school drug them. I slug drug them.
Hold on one minute. We got Scooby from, where you from, Scooby?
Mississippi.
You got Scooby from Mississippi drug the Arkansas boys, Scooby, on the Breadman Show. Stop that, Jimmy. Stop that. Scooby, man, I'm glad to hear that you went to Texas, let alone got in the ring with somebody up there. Good God Almighty. Glad to hear from you.
Like you say, man, me and them guys, we've been going back and forth. They talking about this STN thing, who the baddest, and I just made the difference. And, you know, yeah, Cold Killer, he a hot guy right now. So I told him, I said, I'm going to be hot killer. All these guys that think they hot with these STNs, I'm coming to kill them. And Arkansas, they just thought they was hot.
Oh, man. Well, man, do you have any questions? I mean, for Jimmy, we got Jimmy Marino on here, chassis bumper to bumper. He tell you what wax you need while you're going down the track to improve your ET. You got anything for him?
Well, no, I just, you know, because I come down that way, you know, Mississippi, we got dirt roads down here. So I brought a dirt road tune-up out there with me and went down every time.
It's funny you say that. I use that term with a lot of the guys. That's my favorite type of tune-up. It's a dirt road tune-up. We'll beat them all in the worst conditions. That's my favorite way to race. Give me a bad, hot, gooey racetrack. Let's see who can tune better.
That's what my guy told me. He said, I don't care who it is, run them off the trail. Anyway, man, I was just calling down there, showing support, and Tracy Thomas Dog, man, it was a nice show. Like I say, I made that trip by myself, and I enjoyed every bit of it and looking forward to getting it on some more.
All right, then, Scooby. Hey, you welcome to call in every Monday at 11 o'clock. Scooby, we love to hear from you and hear about what you got going on in your organization, your racing organization, and also in your area. So anytime you'd like to call in, man, call in to the Breadman and Jimmy Marino and Chris Nelson Show. We'd love to have you. Thank you, Trey. All right. Going to the next caller. Caller 954-0396. Your mic is live. Welcome to the Breadman Show.
First of all, what's going on, Breadman?
Nothing much. How are you?
Well, man, what's going on, man? I don't want to hear you say I didn't call your show. I ain't never call your show, so I'll call your show today. Hey, you know, you got my main man on the line, Jimmy Marino, and my other partner is Chris. So, you know, you got two of the most important people on the phone, man. You're doing a good job, Breadman. I listened to you for a good little minute while I'm at work. And I just want to call in your show because you said I ain't never call your show, so I call your show.
Well, you know, I listen at y'all's show every Wednesday as well, and for some reason y'all done skipped town on me the last couple Wednesdays. I found myself writing in, and, you know, the owner of Grudge Inc. call you fast when you know we don't do what we say we're going to do, and I ended up last Wednesday on the show, but I miss y'all, man, and tell your partner, you know what I mean? I miss y'all on Wednesdays. I really do.
Well, you know, that's my main man's fault right there, man. That's Jimmy's fault, man. He got us working, man. He got us testing, so we ain't got time to do no show. So, you know, that's all his fault, man. You got to take that off to Jimmy, man. We've been testing. We probably, I don't know if we're going to do one this week. We got to see if he let us off the hook this week, but if he don't, we're going to be testing.
We're passing.
There you go.
Well, you know, hey,
you win races the weeks that you aren't at the racetrack. The weeks that there aren't a race, that's when you win the races. Getting ready. You can only lose them on race day, but you win them on the days that aren't race day. That's how I see it.
I really thank you. I wanted to reply to that meal you was eating the other day on Facebook. Where y'all was down there? Y'all was in Miami or what? I was trying to figure out what I'm doing wrong, man. Y'all eating at restaurants like that? Y'all supposed to be grudge racers, man. Grudge racers eat hot dogs and spice ham and stuff like that. What's going on here? I'm in the wrong business, man.
Well,
Wow, man, I'm gonna tell you what that was, man. We got another partner as well, as you know, as a part of the clique, which is Jason Murdoch out of Atlanta. Jimmy was gonna head it down to the Keys, so he couldn't come in with us, but we had to take him out to a nice restaurant, show him good time, me, Oscar, PRD, Coochie, you know, we had to take him and show him how we do it down here in the park. So we took him over to this ex-champion boxer, Italian boxer restaurant, and we had a good meal, showed Jason and his wife, you know, his girl a good time, and that's how we do it when we ain't on the, we ain't good.
I feel you. Yeah. I'm got on Facebook and old crew chief boy. I tell you, he throwed it in my face. I couldn't even come back with nothing. I just told him y'all have a good meal. So that's all I can say. Good God Almighty.
Hey, I got a question. Hey T5.
Yeah.
Did you order that diet pasta?
Oh. Nah, man. I actually I ain't even had no pasta. Damn it. Jason girl had pasta, crew chief had pasta. I had seafood, which is not a threat, Mr. Marino.
Okay, all right. Let's make sure we're sticking to that weight program.
Oh yeah. We on it. We on a good tab. You know, we good.
Mm-hmm. What you say, Jim?
Brother,
don't
man,
worry.
I gotta stay on him.
Don't be, he been doing good. I ain't been seeing him stand by that grill like I used to see him when he'd be at the track. You know,
I've been
watching, keeping my eyes on him. You know, he been doing real good. We can't wait to see you back out there engage him, T5. Definitely, man.
We got something coming up here soon. That's why we doing a lot of tests. We got something coming up soon. I don't know, it's up to Jimmy when he let us loose and, you know, go back at it. You know, it might be this weekend, it might be next weekend, but we definitely going to be out there soon.
Okay. Well, hey.
We all know it's a nonstop thing. You got to keep up in your game, so we're always working on something.
Well, that'll do it. Hold by, we'll leave your mic open, T5. I'm so happy to have you on. We're going to go into closing thoughts. Big Jim, you got, let me see. Oh, yeah, that's everybody. That's it. Still got a lot of callers, but if y'all want to go ahead and hit the one button and go and let me get you out the way, I will. Otherwise, the show is drawing near. And things that he would like us to do for the remaining of the week, and then I'll follow him. And T5, if you want to throw something in there, for the closing thoughts and what you feel you want folks to do, we greatly appreciate it, brother. Better yet,
it was good to be on, man. We try to support you whenever we can, man. You know, we at work, so I mean, if I get another chance next week, listen, I will. And thanks for having us on, and tell Mr. Calvin I say hello. Yeah, man.
I will. I appreciate it. All right, thank you. All right. Jim, let's go to you. Big Jim Marino, closing thoughts.
Yeah, I think we got some subjects that we need to cover in the next few weeks. I think torque converters are a big thing, and we can talk more about that. I'd like to get, and I'll make some phone calls, see if we can get a torque converter guy on, because I think there's a lot to be discussed there, and get somebody who's more of an expert on what they're doing with them. And that type of thing. All I know is I tell them what I want it to do and what I don't like and what I do like in comparison to what I've got now. And they'll send me something and I'll comment back on it. And they just do whatever they do inside those things. It's all mystery to me. But maybe we can get somebody. I'll work on getting somebody that can talk more technical about that for next week. And that's about all I got.
All righty, and I tell you, I want to let everybody know that this show is based on this. This is just not my show. It takes Jimmy, Chris, and all of Grudge Inc. to really make this show happen. I thought I was gonna hear my buddy, my good buddy, and the guy that I really learn a lot from is Willie Dog. Come on in and say a few words, but he didn't today. Maybe he's busy. And I want to thank Atomic Dog for coming on and sharing what went on with his race. A lot of these guys are They've been doing Blog Talk Radio a long time. I'm new at it, so fellas, we can only get better at this, and I look forward to putting my all in it to get a whole lot better. I want to thank everyone for calling and participating, most of all. With that being said, I'm going to leave with this right here. Food for thought. Make you always have enough happiness to keep you sweet, enough trials to keep you strong, enough faith to give courage. God will show his strength in your life. May your day be blessed, and God continue to walk beside you. With that being said, that is the show, folks. We will see you next Monday at 11 o'clock p.m., 10 o'clock Eastern on the East Coast. Thanks for calling, and thanks for participating.
Grudge Inc. is taking it to another level. Coming in 2013, all of your auto performance needs can be found in one location. Grudge Inc. will be launching an online auto parts store catering specifically to your auto performance needs. Being available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Grudge Inc.'s Grudge Store wants to be your number one online shop site. 2013, get ready for Grudge Inc.'s Grudge Store. More details to follow soon. Are you new to social networking? Well, Grudge Inc. has got a new site coming soon. Grudge Book will allow you to catch up and lock in with other grudge racers. Find out about all the latest events, view the latest photos, create your own blogs, and so much more. In 2013, Grudge Inc. takes on the social networks. So get ready to register and lock in. Grudge Inc. Grudge Book. Welcome to Grudge Inc. Wednesdays with your host, Chris, also known as Banshee Lover. Dedicated to Grudge Bikes.
Grudge Inc. is taking over social networking. To get live, in-depth coverage on current races, follow us on Twitter at Grudge Inc. To view the most up-to-date and exclusive footage, subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/GrudgeIncTV. To get an overview of it all, friend us on Facebook at facebook.com/Grudge Inc. And last but not least, we have a weekly newsletter that we will send directly to your email every Monday. Sign up for this newsletter at www.grudgeinc.us. Once again, watch videos at youtube.com/